Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Doing good, Russell. Yourself?
Oh, pretty good. You know, playoffs are going on and all that good stuff. So it's a great time of the year. A lot of fun stuff going on. We're certainly going to talk about the playoffs. And towards the end of the show, we'll talk about a little bit of Flyers news. But right now, we're waiting on Brian Metzer. He's going to call in any second, which is my fault. I told him to call it at 11, so, you know, that's on me. But
yeah,
we'll talk a little bit about that Penguin series because it's been an interesting one.
Yeah, it's been interesting because it's tight, and there's times in the series where I feel like the Caps have outplayed the Penguins. But, again, hockey for you.
It's true.
It says a lot about them as a team, I think, the Penguins, that they're able to sort of, you know, to be able to stare in the eyes of one-goal games and not blink. And they've done that, and it's been pretty remarkable in that respect.
Well, we'll find out from Brian. He's here now from, oh, boy, NHL.com, Penguins Radio, all kinds of stuff. Brian, how are you?
Not too bad. How about you guys? Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So we're talking about the Penguins that you cover, and I have to say, you do a really good job. You're not too homerish. You look at both sides. You know, there's a lot of guys around the league that don't necessarily do that. So I appreciate the fact that you do that. And now it's kind of interesting because, you know, many of us thought, hey, the Penguins made some good trades, but we didn't know if their defense would hold up. I'm sure you didn't know if their defense would hold up. And now it turns out that the overall team speed and puck possession has turned out to be more valuable than hard, gritty defense. I mean, you just never can tell when, I guess, the NHL is going to sort of change on a dime. And it seems like they've sort of revolutionized it a bit.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch, guys, just how they have used speed to change the entire way they played the game this year. If you look back to first couple months of the season, they're just a night and day situation here in Pittsburgh, and that's partly Mike Sullivan coming in and revamping the system. It's partly getting the acquisitions of Carl Hagelin, who we all know can burn, and Trevor Daley.
Yeah.
But then some of the youngsters that they brought up, I'm curious for your take. Did you envision guys like Brian Rust and Connor Sheary ever really making this big an impact at the National Hockey League level? I know some of us here in town thought they could become players, but not guys that can come in and seemingly look like they might be here to stay. So that they've helped it too, because they play a very high speed or high pace game themselves. So they have not needed to play a bruising style. They just push teams back. They score timely goals, and it's really got them in a pretty good spot right now. It's been a lot of fun to cover just because it is this crazy transformation, and teams just don't do that mid-season all that often.
True. I was higher on Rust than Sheary. I actually hadn't had that much coverage of Sheary, and, you know, the skating part's great. He is playing with Crosby. Like, we have to say that, because for all the gushing that Joe Micheletti will do over Sheary, he's contributing way more than you would ever think he would contribute, but it's not like he's a point-of-game guy either. Sometimes you got to calm down so they don't kill these kids with kindness, and then the next year you wonder why there's a drop-off. But, no, I mean, look, Mike Sullivan, I saw the change when he was here in Philly and they shut out the Flyers, and that's when I sort of saw the changeover in me not being worried about them playing tough defense and them just doing those other things. And, Ant, you were watching that game, I'm sure, and probably had the same feeling.
No, my impression was exactly the same. I was just watching them going. There was a structure to their play defensively that I had not seen, certainly not since going back, obviously, to prior coaching regimes before Mike Johnson. There was a definite noticeable change defensively in how they deployed their guys, how they matched up. And again, it's to their credit. I mean, it was. The Flyers Penguins situation's always been an interesting one with the whole history of the one team. You know, the Flyers being really good at console, but that's all changed now, pretty much by what Sullivan's been able to put in play. But Brian, I'll throw this to you. In terms of the goaltending situation's absolutely been a fascinating one as well. I mean, We've seen Matt Murray dominate at the AHL level, but to the point now where really the Penguins can really hang their hat. What he did obviously the other night was I believe in game three, where he just was just amazing in terms of him being able to hold back the Capitals.
That, you know what, I mean, not a lot of teams have the ability to have a secondary goaltender step in and play at this high level. And you would have thought the moment Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't available late in the season, let alone in the playoffs, that would have derailed what the Penguins were doing. But I think we all had evidenced it across the league. People were calling on Matt Murray at the trade deadline. I think the story started to get out on him a bit based on what he did in the American Hockey League last year. And he's really started to develop at a very quick pace here in Pittsburgh. And to come in and roll up a 1.81 goals against average in the Stanley Cup playoffs in your first seven starts, that's pretty outstanding stuff. But he's kind of a unique kid because nothing seems to bother him. I mean, he just – I can't believe how much he can just shake off even a bad goal. Because we all remember here in Pittsburgh the way Marc-Andre Fleury, early in his career, he didn't have that ability. If he let up a bad goal,
no.
You'd maybe two or three more go in because he'd be overthinking the first one in the first period. Matt Murray, to use a Clint Hurdleism here in Pittsburgh, you know, going to the Pirates, he showers very well. Nothing lingers with him, and it's really helped the Penguins get to where they are because they would have been dead in the water without the goaltending. And I should point a finger in Jeff Zadkoff's direction, too. He won a game for them in these playoffs, and that just is Jim Rutherford looking like a wily old vet and keeping himself flush in goaltending because he knows what happened to him losing Cam Ward so many times over the years in Carolina.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Although he has mortgaged quite a bit of the Penguins' future, I do think in the offseason, if it were me, and this is going to be my statement and question for you, if it were me, I would be shopping around Marc-Andre Fleury in the off season because I've been sold on Murray since they drafted him. Even though he was really skinny when they presented him in Pittsburgh, like I knew about him, and he's done nothing but show me that he is a number one guy, and that may be the only way the Penguins can really get out from under because they have like you know three or four good prospects in their system, but other than Sprong, they don't really have anybody that's at a really high level, like at a top line, top pairing level. And to be honest, Derek Pouliot continues to disappoint me.
Oh, yeah, I'm right there with you. I wish they would have traded him a season or two ago because we all saw this coming, that he did not have the ceiling of an Ollie Matt or something like that. It's amazing to me that he was taken so much higher in the draft.
I know.
And then when you look at all the other defensemen that were taken in that draft and you start to say, you know, you almost want the sad trombone, you know, whenever you think about the Penguins drafting him, but I think there might be a GM or two out there that still believes in him that they could find a taker for him. But I do agree. I don't think we're too far removed from potentially seeing Marc-Andre Fleury shopped around a little bit, and that's going to be tough for a lot of people here in town.
Or
all
he
know
could be the starting goalie for Las Vegas soon.
Well, but hey, that's something to consider because that's the thing that everybody's worried about because of you're not quite exactly sure how the roles are going to shake out for the expansion draft. The Penguins would be afraid of losing a Murray or a Fleury, that kind of thing. And I still think that Phil Kessel is going to be playing for the Las Vegas team at some point too, but that's just me. You know, he's sort of acquitted himself here in the playoffs, but Murray clearly is the heir apparent here in town. They still have Tristan Jarry in the minors who could end up being a solid
really
backup
good too.
Here
he
in
is.
Pittsburgh. Yeah, he's a good player. I mean, and we know that. So it's amazing in just two or three years to see where the Penguins were prior to that 2012 draft with zero goaltending depth to now have a couple of guys in the system that could potentially be pushing at their or nipping at the heels of Marc-Andre. That's a good problem to have. I still think they're probably half a season at least, maybe a season away from doing away with Marc-Andre, but it would be a quick fix in trying to solidify their system because, as you said, Russ, not a whole lot there in terms of high-end talent besides Daniel Sprong, and they've got to somehow revitalize that and get themselves a couple more blue chips in there.
Brian, you and I have had conversations about some of the bottom six forwards on the Penguins most recently. And again, as we know, with any team that's going to have a chance of winning a Stanley Cup, you have to have a strong spine down the middle. Guys like Nick, you obviously want to speak to the guys like Nick Bonino and obviously even Matt Cullen, even at age 39, you know, having a cagey veteran in there who's been through the wars, and we've talked before, obviously, about he's an old hand with Rutherford. Speak to the importance of those two guys as much as the top-end guys.
Well, the amazing thing for Nick Bonino is if you look back midway through the season, people were ready to run him out of town. They just thought that he was a disappointment. He wasn't getting it done here. But then if Denny Malkin went down with an injury on February 5th, and the rest is history, because Nick Bonino became one of the best forwards on the roster, and he has been doing that pretty much ever since. He's meshed very well with Hagelin and Kessel, has that ability to just come late on plays, and just he makes those seeing-eye passes to Hagelin now a couple times in the playoffs. And
yeah,
I think he's really shown what everybody saw in his game, maybe in Vancouver and in Anaheim when he was doing it there. So I think
that when he won a Frozen
now,
Four, I covered that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a great college player. I mean, a lot of guys on that team, Russ, were pretty outstanding players, and you weren't sure what they were going to be coming into the NHL. But I think he's been very valuable. If you take Nick Bonino out of this series against the Caps even, who knows? It might be 3-1 the other way because he and his line have put together some very timely scoring for the Penguins. Now, I am out of superlatives when it comes to talking about Matt Cullen. I, for one, and I don't know if you guys have seen me bash myself on social media about this, but I tore that up back on August 7th when he was acquired because I was just thinking, you just went out and traded Brandon Sutter for Bonino. You sign Eric Fair the same day. You have Oscar Sundquist that you want to slot into your organization. What are you going to do with Matt Cullen? Well, he comes in, becomes an extension of the coaching staff, does such a great job working with the youngsters here, goes out, scores 16 goals and 32 points in the regular season, and has two game-winning goals in the playoffs, including and then his third goal the other night that keeps the Penguins ahead in a 2-1 game. And then, of course, we all know they go on to win that one thanks to just his strong performance in the faceoff dot for the first time in the series. He won a couple big ones after losing some in the first few games. But he's been – I can't even like tell you how valuable he has been here in Pittsburgh, and I eat a lot of crow on that one when I bash that acquisition because he was probably the best acquisition of the season for Jim Rutherford when you really want to get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody would have guessed that, and there's no way they're going to give him any kind of really great deal. Maybe they'll give him 2 years. I don't even know if they'll give him that. So I'm with you on that. Now, the series obviously isn't over. I mean, the Caps are still a really good team, and I think – They've made some mistakes. I think they've played Mike Richards even too much at 9 minutes a game. I wouldn't even have him in a lineup. I would have Michael Lotta in there. I just think he's slowing them down, and I think that's been hurting them. I think Trotz has not really been adjusting to what Pittsburgh's doing out there, and I think that's been hurting them. And I think Trotz is also just a little too loyal to some of his guys late in the game. I think he's got to, like, shorten the bench. In a way, he's sort of – And it's not inexperience because he's certainly been in the playoffs a lot and he's known this team for a couple of years now. But it seems like he's made Sullivan's job a little bit easier for him at times.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was curious to see how the coaching matchup would work here. Two different times in this series, or even going back to the Rangers series, I thought that Mike Sullivan looked to overthink things a little bit. And that happened in game two against the Rangers when Geno Malkin came back, where he sort of disrupted all of his forwards by just bringing one guy back. That shouldn't happen. He corrected it moving forward. Then the same thing sort of happened with the blue line. He loses Olli Maatta. He starts overthinking it a little bit there, puts Pouliot in, who's not been good in this series. But he's gotten away with that because of all of the things that the Caps haven't done against them. So I think the biggest problem for the Capitals against the Penguins, and I knew this was going to be an issue when they played the Rangers, for the Rangers, just that they were going to continue to try and hit the Penguins, and it's harder for them to maybe keep up with the speed right now, which is crazy because we know the Rangers are still a pretty fast team, but they were exposed a little bit by the Penguins' speed, and the Caps are a little bit bigger, a little bit slower, and I think the Capitals were built a little bit more like a Western Conference team. That's not going to play well against the Penguins right now because they can just sort of outskate you. And they're doing that to the Caps so far in this series. They're getting the timely garbage goals just by having guys in and around the net, getting a couple lucky bounces. And, of course, taking Brooks Orpik out of the lineup made them – not that Brooks is fleet of foot now, but they got a little bit slower even when they had to put Mike Weber in. and he obviously was the GOAT in having a bad puck deflect off his stick for the overtime goal. So they have to find a way to open it up with their stars and get some speed going back against the Penguins, because when you attack them with speed, you get them playing east-west, and they are horrible. When they don't continue to move the puck north, they are completely out of their game, and you can really beat them, but the Caps aren't doing it to them enough. And I expect them to do it tomorrow night in Washington in Game 5, because they obviously have to win a game. And if they do that and find a way to win, then you get Brooks Orr picked back. Maybe Nate Schmidt's healthy and he comes back in, and the Caps can maybe get a star or two on the board, because that's not happened either. And it's interesting from a Pittsburgh perspective, guys, because how many playoffs...
Wait, Mets, are you making a big prediction here that Game 5 is a must-win for the Capitals? Is that... Are you going out on a limb with that?
Well... I don't know about that. I mean, anything can happen. They may change a rule or two. But based on the opponent, the league would never change a rule. Because based on the opponent, we all know the nod goes to the Pittsburgh Penguins, at least according to Barry Trotz, right?
We got an earful of that in the first round series, didn't we, Russ?
Yeah, we
for
did.
For Trotz. Billy.
Yep,
he loves his game. It's gamesmanship time when it comes to Barry. He really likes to play that fiddle well. Brian, question for you from my end. I know sometimes this is something that may be a bit overstated, but and we've seen teams certainly be successful in the playoffs without their power play humming at full capacity. I know the Penguins' power play, especially in the series against the Caps, has had some struggles. Certainly has had some struggles. In your mind,
that's an understatement.
Something that, yeah, exactly. In your mind, is it something that could potentially, over the long haul, if it doesn't loosen up, can become a bit of a concern for them?
Well, definitely. I mean, you got to score with the extra man. Even though I did a piece for the Beaver County Times coming into the playoffs that looked back at the past, you know, probably 6 or 7 Stanley Cup winners, and a lot of them did not necessarily have great power plays throughout the playoffs. And so you really have to look at it series by series, because obviously every penalty kill is different. And when you start to look at a team 6 and 7 times, of course it's going to be harder to maybe find holes or figure them out. They start to shut you down in ways that maybe they didn't in Game 1 or 2. But in this situation, this is probably one of the best PKs that they're going to run into right now. What the Penguins are seeing in the Caps, they've been so aggressive. They pressure better than a lot of the penalty kills that they were running up against, certainly doing a better job than the Rangers did whenever they let 8 power play goals up in 5 games against the Penguins. And if they can, and you know, that's just, I can't even believe that the Penguins did that. Based in Game 1 and Game 2, their power play looked very bad to me, and yet they were finding ways to score. Their entries weren't good. They weren't moving the puck all that well, but they found a way to score goals, and I guess that's all that counts. In this series, their entries have been okay, but once they're in the zone, they don't do anything. And I think they're keeping the puck at the perimeter too much, no shots on goal, no traffic. And you know, with Braden Holtby, I mean, you're not going to score shooting from the point all the time. You've got to get that traffic on him, and the Caps have done a great job with their aggressive approach. So if the Penguins can get through this series without scoring on their power play, I think it will start to come awake or come alive a little bit again in the next round against either the Lightning or the Islanders, which right now might end up being the Lightning, I guess, based on how that series has gone. But
do you think there's a better
weird
matchup there if the Penguins do move on? Let's say the Islanders, you know, let's say the Islanders don't. Is that the better matchup, or is that the worst matchup, you think, for the Penguins?
I think you always, when the Penguins are involved, you always have the hot goaltender syndrome that pops up, and I think they would much rather face Greiss than they would Ben Bishop, just based on the way Ben Bishop can play so big, takes up so much of his net. Of course, with the speed that the Lightning can come at you with, I think they're a pretty deep team. They would be able to match up probably a little better with the Penguins than the Islanders would. But not to be one of those people, I think just like a lot of others around the league, you're looking at the Caps or Penguins as a team that should be able to beat either of those other two teams to get to the Stanley Cup. But you got to play the games. And both of those teams have broken the Penguins' heart over the years. I mean, of course, 1993 with the Islanders, and we all know that the Tampa Bay Lightning came back from a 3-1 deficit to beat the Penguins just a handful of years ago. So that will be fresh in everybody's mind.
What about the Zamboni driver tonight, Mets? I mean, I understand that Zamboni driver at the Barclays hit the boards and they had to hammer him back in because, I don't know, I guess, it's harder. It looks like it's harder to drive the Zamboni than we all thought.
Well, maybe he had his eye on that sweet car that's parked right outside the glass. Oh. And he thought it was on.
Sweet would not be what I would describe it as being, Brian. It's not sweet.
Well, hey, any car that's in a hockey rink that's out there on display. But yet, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that where the boards and glass and everything were sort of blown up. And what a situation, too. I mean, I'm sure that nobody liked waiting around for that repair to happen.
Brian, a question for you. In terms of another series, the Dallas-St. Louis series, the whole, I guess, it was quite a bit of bulletin board material made up on Ryan Reeves' blowing of kisses to the to the Dallas fans.
Gosh.
And that's one of the things. It's one of the, well, you know, I love these subplots in the playoffs, and it becomes utterly fascinating to listen to and to see. What was your view on that? Did you get a good laugh out of that and thought to yourself, is this something that motivates another team?
Oh, it would motivate me. I mean, you want to go out and, like, pop them in the face, you know? But I would have been fine. I think it's funny. The guy goes out like that. He runs around a little bit. He stirs it up and gets into fights and does all those things. And then it just you can almost undo what you just did with the intimidation or with the physicality by blowing the kiss. Because then those other guys are like, oh, my God, I'm going to kill that guy now. And I think that he sort of brought that out of them. But at the same time, the Blues they got a little bit of a swagger right now, you know. They're feeling pretty comfortable, and they're playing probably their best. They're putting together their best playoff appearance in however many years now, just the way that they're doing this. And maybe it's all Brian Elliott. Maybe they should have just put him in net 3 years ago, and we wouldn't even be having this talk.
Yeah, I don't know if Elliott's
he would have won a cup by
now. Yeah. I don't know if he's been that good, though. I think there's
no
other
he's not.
Circumstance.
I just like him.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, hey, before I let you go, so last night I was at Generation X, right? And it was a show of great guitarmen, and Yngwie Malmsteen, the worst job in the United States yesterday was to be his guitar tech, because he got through his intro, which I put a little bit of it on Facebook. I went live with it. I never did it before, but I was like, hey, what the hell? And then afterwards, and he's kind of lucky I didn't do this, I would say for the next 15 minutes, he'd play a little, he'd yell a little. He'd play a little, he'd yell a little. He'd use the F word. And at one point, they looked back at the 45 amps, and I felt for this guitar tech, like, because it's just like, which amp is it? I don't know. Like, it was, I'd never seen anything like it. And I thought of you, because, you know, you're a big concert goer, and you like metal. And so, any thoughts on that?
Well, not too long ago, and you probably saw this story pop up, it was right whenever this new incarnation of Megadeth went on tour for the first time with Kiko in the lineup, and they were touring, I think, doing some of the new songs on the new album, and Dave Mustaine was sort of getting bashed for some horrible guitar sound, and he literally came out on a Periscope video, bashed the guitar tech right after, and fired the guy, essentially. It called him, like, names and everything publicly, I guess you sort of know that you're getting into that if you go with one of the – and I love Dave Mustaine, but you know you're working for an egomaniac in a way when you when you throw in with one of those guys. So I guess Yngwie's guy probably knew that as well. But how horrific that you're being thrown under the bus essentially in front of everybody that's in that room, in front of the other guitar players that were on that bill. And there were some pretty big names there, obviously, Russ. I feel bad.
Well,
for
Steve Vai was nice to him. Steve Vai was very nice to him afterwards, so he probably made up for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, he is a member of Chickenfoot now, so he's got to be nice.
I didn't even know Chickenfoot was still around. All right.
I just saw them. I just saw they just put out a video. I don't know if Sammy put it out or somebody that they're doing it. There was a jam session working on new Chickenfoot material, and I was like, boy, who's clamoring for a new Chickenfoot album? Certainly not me.
I guess he replaces Satriani. That's my guess, right?
Yeah, but you know what? And I think I just made the biggest gaffe on earth, because Steve Vai is not in Chickenfoot. It is Satriani.
Oh, okay. Oh, well.
Oh, that's ridiculous. How was Zach Wilde, by the way? I have to know that answer.
Zach Wilde was good. You should go see on my Facebook page. I actually have – he may have done the longest solo in the history of solos. He ran up and down a couple of aisles on a couple of different sides of the venue, and the issue was with a cord. I've never seen it. The guy who I was going to the concert with is a guitarist. He's never seen it. And, he, you know, he did Behind the Neck. He did everything. I got to say, the guy was full of energy, and he was fun to watch. He was.
Yeah, that's a blast. I'm happy to hear it. Zach always brings the energy, even though I have to throw in right now and say I'm team Nick Catanese, because I know Nick here in Pittsburgh, the evil twin who used to play in Black Label Society, and Nick's a big Penguins fan. So on the odd chance Nick is listening, lest he think any different, I'm team Nick, and everybody else should be as well. But Zach is a very gifted musician, and I'm glad that he put on a good show for you.
All right, we're gonna cut you there. We're going to do a little Flyers talk at the end here, but we appreciate you coming on. It was last minute. You're a mensch, and everybody should check you out on Twitter at Brian_Metzer, and then all the articles that you're writing and on NHL.com and everything else. Thanks. I'll see you soon at the draft or at the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun for me. And I'm doing the intermission reports for home games on Penguins radio broadcast, so check that out if you guys get a chance.
Awesome. I've been on it, and he's great. So thanks, Brian.
All right, guys. I'll see you at the draft, if not before. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Take care, Brian. Good having you.
Take care.
All right, Ant. So let's chat a minute about Ivan Provorov. He won the WHL Defenseman of the Year. It's interesting because I just taped my XM show this week where we did our top 30 and we did our new placement since the under-18s. And I'll probably have one more after the World Championships, because there are some, you know, young guys playing in the World Championships and it might affect it. By the way, and it's almost impossible to find the World Championships in the States, but I finally did on like channel 597 and on Verizon. I don't even know the name of the channel. I've never heard of it. But anyhow,
You ready for a funny story? Speaking of Walt, my in-laws are actually going to St. Petersburg this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah. They were actually scoping out, trying to maybe potentially get tickets for maybe a game or two. So I'm like, that happens. I said, you have to scout.
Yeah. Yeah, you might as well put them
to good work. But they're expensive. They were like, oh, it's like $100, $200 tickets. I'm going, well, isn't it? I was telling my father-in-law, I was like, well, Papa, it is an international event. It doesn't happen in Russia that often. But, yeah, I'd love to be there, certainly. But they're going to St. Petersburg, just for vacation. So, yeah.
I love it.
Little subplot there, but you weren't. Maybe I know you.
I wasn't expecting that. I want to let people know in 2 minutes we might pop off, and if we go 2 or 3 minutes in overtime, they can come back and listen. But so Provorov wins the WHL Defenseman of the Year, and the interesting thing is, you know, I was talking about Olli Juolevi on this week's broadcast, and Shane brought up, boy, he's sort of getting the non-play that Provorov did for a long time, and it is true because, like, I think it's going on 3 years ago now. I scouted him in the USHL. I wrote, this guy's a definite NHLer. You got to watch him, you know, and nothing. And then half season goes by, and he's leading the WHL practically in scoring, and he was a top defenseman and nothing. And then, you know, it finally kicked in second half of the year for him. And so I'm glad to see that he's getting the accolades, but I don't want there to be super hype for him when he comes into town and everybody expecting him to make the team because – he's their top prospect, because again, it's a tough position. He still might not make the team.
Yeah, he might not. I mean, he's a fascinating player. Juolevi, certainly a guy, you know, if you get into that, you know, he's after the first three picks, which I think at this point we're not quite chalk yet, but we know who the top three are. But Juolevi's got, you know, 6'2", he's still got, you know, some
room
weight to add to him, but he reminds me a lot. There's a lot about him that does remind me a bit of Provorov in terms of what he's able to do. He's all around. He's an all around defenseman. He's a tough little bugger too. I've watched him in the games that he goes at. He's physically engaged. He's a guy that I think he's a guy that. Again, at this point now, it seems any more that most teams, a lot of people are looking for defensive prospects that all have superior size and, you know, the bigger frames. And it's like, that's not what it's all about when it comes to defensemen. It's as much about how they use their frame. And I think he's a defensive watching him who knows how to play within whatever his limits are. And it's not a lot of them, but I think he uses his size, which is pretty good to his advantage. And he's just a high, like I say, he's just a really good, I like the fact that he's just a really good playmaker, and he's the kind of guy that I think can be a major possession driver for a lot of teams.
Sure, but I'm saying, like, you know, heading into rookie camp and everything, are you going to sort of be of the pump the brakes thing like me with Provorov and with, like, Konechny and say, hey, listen, don't start saying he's definitely going to make the team or start pushing towards that. We got to just see what happens.
We always have to see what happens. I would certainly say that for Konechny, for everybody who wants Konechny to come to be coming into the league.
I mean, he's rehabbing right now, so that's the other thing.
Exactly. That's the other thing we have to take a look at here is that he is rehabbing at the same time, and I think the Flyers want to probably take a little bit more of a slower take with him. Provorov,
yeah.
I think if he's able to sort of maintain things with his defense, I think they're in a rock and a hard place with him. There's certain guys that if they're just ready to play, they're just ready to play. I think they would just prefer that you would be able to play him in the AHL, but that's not an option for them.
Right.
So they're really sort of in a spot where they almost have to, you know, make that decision and say, hey, after this playoff run with Brandon and seeing where he goes, it's almost like it's Flyers or bust for him. Going back to Brandon for another year, does that necessarily serve him at the skill level that he's at in terms of playing?
I mean, it never
hurts
the player. That's the bottom line.
I don't want to say it ever hurts the player, but it could feel like something where he's kind of spinning a little bit of neutral. And I'm normally very I'm very conservative with regards to defenseman development. But when you watch some guys and it's just they leap out at you. He's just the guy that leaps out at you that looks like he's going to be ready to play in the NHL. So if the Flyers if he doesn't look like he's ready, I mean, when he gets to camp, we'll be observing him obviously closely when we get to dev camp and training camp, and we'll see where he's going to be at. And it'll be obvious very quickly whether or not he's going to be able to play at this level or not. And at that point, it makes things really easy in terms of if you send him back to Brandon, you just tell him, you know, you're still not quite ready yet. And will that be disappointing to Flyers fans?
Here's the worst case scenario.
Sure.
Worst case scenario is he goes back to Brandon. He's team captain. He maybe goes on another Memorial Cup run. Like, those things never hurt.
Maybe.
They really don't.
No, I don't think those things ever hurt. It's just you get that distinct impression with him, depending on how far – if Brandon's able to win their series and get into the Memorial Cup, if he's able to sort of – win everything this year, then that experience has been, you know, he's had that experience at that point. What else, you know, what else is left for him to do? And you could say being a team captain and all that, and that's great, but if he's topped out and achieves the highest level he can in Canadian juniors, it makes it even more likely that the Flyers are going to want to probably keep him on their roster. And again, they'll be subtracting.
But you don't
want
to put him in like a number six role. That's the thing. You can't do that.
But how harmful would that be if you're playing him in a six role? If you're limiting him, working him in.
It's harmful if he doesn't play the right amount of minutes. Then it's harmful.
Maybe. And again, they'll be. I think if they use him again, his performance will dictate how much they're going to use him. I mean, I'll go back all the way to Sean Couturier and how they use Sean Couturier basically straight out of junior. And it was very obvious that he was an NHL player from jump, and Peter Laviolette was using him from jump in a pretty prominent role for the Flyers. I think that's probably what will happen to Provorov in this case. They're going to want to see him second pair probably, but if they're in a rock and a hard place and they have to sort of dip his toe in the water a little bit at the outset, they'll see how he plays from third pair, and if it leaps off the table that he's much better than whoever they got on their second pairing, he'll move up the ladder pretty fast.
Yeah, no doubt. Good conversation. We'll leave it there. There'll be plenty more to talk about, and we'll definitely talk more about the playoffs, and we'll see what happens with the Islanders, and we'll see what happens with Nashville and all the other series. And you know what? We'll talk about it next week, but that's it for this week. We'll catch everybody next time.
Absolutely. Take care, everybody.
The family member who was concerned. The neighbor who felt uneasy. The teacher who was worried. the coach who noticed at practice, and you. Together, we can tackle child abuse. If you suspect child abuse, visit gov.uk/reportchildabuse to find out who to call.